Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Fatia Abdullah. I worked for the UN over 30 years, probably in the global humanitarian sector, mainly in conflict zones like Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, and other related. So I'm very glad to be here, not on the subject I'm going to talk about, but to contribute to this important conference. And I appreciate the opportunity to share with you aspect of the Sudan conflict and its impact on the society, in particular women and girls who bear the brunt of the conflict. At the same time, with heavy heart, my thoughts go to those who are being affected directly or indirectly by the conflict in my country, Sudan. My session will cover the background, current situation, which is basically the war, not basically, by large, the impact on women and girls, and the women's role and their contribution, and then I leave you with some conclusion. And I think this platform gave me the opportunity really to highlight Sudan, because Sudan is not competing with Gaza, is not competing with Ukraine, but you will see the atrocities, and it is described the biggest and the worst humanitarian and protection crisis in the world, which I will tell you about. Now, where is Sudan? Do we have a pointer? Okay, I'll just maybe use this. Okay, I don't have a pointer to show you, but this is the map of Sudan. And then for those who don't know it, it is the biggest country in Africa. Until 2011, the Sudan separated, the South Sudan separated from Sudan and became a country of its own. It shared the borders with 7 countries, as you see it in the map. And again, it shared the longest coastal of the Red Sea with Saudi Arabia and Eritrea. The confluence of the Blue Nile coming from Uganda, and the Blue Nile coming from Ethiopia, and the White Nile coming from Uganda, merging in Khartoum, is a notable geographic feature within Sudan. Sudan is rich in mineral, water, agri-land, and livestock. And you will see later how these resources did not contribute to peace, but rather to conflict. In the past, Sudan hosted generously millions of people, millions of refugees from Ethiopia and Eritrea. But today, you will see the number of refugees going out of Sudan, seeking protection out of persecution. It has 50 million population. It is capital Khartoum. I think many of the people here in UK, they know Khartoum because it is a British colony, and it is got its independence in 1956. Just to say a little bit about the history, Sudan really, the event in Sudan is characterized by domination of military coup with episodes of civilian government for a short period. The significant, maybe coup I'll mention, in 1969 lasted for 16 years. And another one in 1989 lasted for 30 years. Until 2019, a revolution came where women participated, and only lasted, the revolution and the civilian government lasted for about a year. And another coup led to the conflict we have today. So the conflict in Sudan, it started with a peaceful demonstration, broke out in several cities, led to removal of the 30 years military, as I just mentioned. The ongoing war erupted in Khartoum on a quiet Saturday in 15th of April, 2023, until today. That is exactly 39 days when I came out of Khartoum visiting a family. And it was beautiful, but I didn't know that is the end. And that is my bye to Khartoum. So it's quite emotional for me. I left Sudan with the hope that I will go back, but of course it didn't happen. The struggle happened the conflict between two forces of the government, army men. One is called Sudanese Armed Forces, and the other one is Rapid Support Force, which is RSF. This led to the destruction of facilities, sudden mass displacement, killing, fear, and total chaos. An institution destroyed, including the TV, which was established in 1962, hospitals, museum, erasing the history. Now, the key fact about this conflict, you will see the number, but as I said, it is described as the world's humanitarian crisis and protection crisis by the UN. About 14 million people have been displaced over 3 years now, and internally displaced people, 10 million. That is the size of London, you can imagine. 4 million people crossed the border over those countries surrounding Sudan. 30.4 million is in need of humanitarian assistance. That is half of the population. And 3.7 million of children and breastfeeding mothers, children under five, suffering from acute malnutrition. And if they do not get the support, of course they will die. We know that for a fact. 14 million children are out of school, out of 17 million children. You can imagine these are lost generation, and we know that education is a savior and protection for girls in particular. There was disease outbreak, cholera, and others. A most affected area now face large scale of explosive hazard contamination. So people are trying to go back from Egypt, from Chad, from all those countries, to go back to Khartoum because they love their home, they love their country, and they did not go far. But then they can't go back. Famine was confirmed in Darfur. I'll speak about Darfur later. The UN has appealed for $4 million to address the issues, the humanitarian issues only, and they only get 28%. The professor talks about the funding and catastrophic funding when it comes to peace. This is not only for, this is not for peace. This is for food, for water, for health. And this is what we have. Now, Al-Fashir, I think you heard on the news that there's this city in Darfur, and Darfur is about 11 million people maybe, experienced a war in 2003, which displaced 2 million people, and the perpetrator attracted the attention of the ICC. Now again, in this year, in October, end of October, the people start to be displaced because of the attacks of the one of the army forces, which is the RSF. El-Fashir is the biggest city in Darfur, and now for 500 days or 18 months has been under siege. You will see in the picture, the people who have been displaced are majority women and children, because the men were either killed or detained. So it is a very difficult situation, and this is one of the camp people were going to. That was in April 2025, and now in October 2025, in November, people are moving again to another city, which hosts more than half a million people. The UN said, blood on the sand, blood on the hand, UN really decries the world failure as Sudan Al-Fashir fall. And this is a big city with many million of people. And you will see that Tom Fletcher as well leading the advocacy, and he was saying, we're failing Sudan, and Sudan is descending even in a darker hole. And here you see a bunker, traditional bunker digged by people to hide themselves in this bunker. I lived in Afghanistan for 2 years, and I worked there, and I know what bunkers means to protect people. We run to these bunkers when there's explosion outside our offices or near the IDB camp. This is will not save people, but that's the desperation of people, and they're trying to do their best to survive. Now, this one you might not see probably, but you can see Tom Fletcher saying that Sudan already, the scene of catastrophic levels of human suffering has descended into an even darker hell. Now, before really I talk about the impact of the war on women, let me tell you who are these women we're talking about, and who and what is really their contribution to Sudan as well and to the region. So the Sudanese women have participated and pioneers in many fields. For example, the first female doctor in Sudan in 1946 broke the gender barriers in medicine. In 1952, Sudanese Women Union was founded, uniting women across the region to fight the equal rights for women. Fatma Hadib Ahmed Ibrahim, who has lived here in the UK and died here, the late Fatima, became the first woman elected to the African Parliament in 1965, championing women's rights. So Sudanese women were instrumental in Sudanese journalists and writers across decades, and have been engaged in activism, promotion for education, and leadership, which led to the peaceful demonstration in 2019, and unfortunately, it did not last. Here you will see, this is one of the Kandaka, and Kandaka means in the Sudanese Arabic is a Nubian queen. This is, has been an ancient vocabulary used describing the resilience and the courage of women at the time. And this is one of the Sudanese young women participated in the peaceful demonstration, which led to the downfall of the military that has been there for 30 years. Now, the conflict impact of women, what does it mean really? And what happened to these women, which we just talked about, many of them like that. So there's a breakdown of the social fabric. Many women become single-headed household. There is multiple displacement, even within the country, people run away, women in particular, from one place to another, from one city to another. And there is family separation and disappearances. My family will tell me the most thing, you know, made them to run away is that they worried their children will be raped. The bullet become really like the one, the rape become like a bullet. And women bodies are used as a war weapon. So, and there's loss of income. Women have lost their income, even their little business. And there's a burden of caring. As you know, women naturally, they care for families, they care for communities, but then that has become a burden, extra one. And lack of access, of course, to health services. You'll see later what happened to women who got pregnant out of rape. And then there's forced child marriage. Many families fear rape, and they made their daughters to, you know, to marry by force. So, then the impact of the sexual violence itself. Remember, there's no rule of law, impunity, and perpetrators are free today in Sudan to do more harm. Despite of documented report by the UN, by the Human Rights, by the ICC, but the same issue we talked about, the accountability and impunity. Why there is no action? Why things doesn't happen when we have proof and when there's atrocities and crime? So here, you have the magnitude, 12 million people in Sudan are at risk of sexual violence. Boys and girls, including infants as young as 1 year, are among the victims. And that gang rape and killing become really the feature. And gang rape is something the perpetrator use to humiliate women and girls in front of their families. Sexual slavery is a big thing. I used to think this is just a vocabulary in the books, but it's happening in Khartoum today. Now, this is just testimonies from people we work with. For example, one woman says sexual violence has become as widespread as weapon, as guns and bullets. Women are at our facilities exhausted, traumatized, often after months of displacement, she told UNFPA. And then there's another one, her name is, this is not her real name, Asel. She said, she told one of our focal point we work with, and we do work with an organization called Humanitarian Action for Sudan. We support that. So what she said, I am only 17 years old, raped by armed men, became pregnant. With help of some people, I fled the area and now in a safe place. Gave birth to a girl. I cannot go back home and I want to continue my education. And we know that education is important to them, but how would they access education? It's quite expensive as well. And it's not safe to go to any school. Gender-based violence, especially in Sudan, she said, we have documented numerous cases of women and girls who have survived rape and sexual violence, including adolescent girls and women girls with disabilities. Many are left coping with unwanted pregnancies, sexually transmitted infection, and deep psychological trauma. So the trauma is really huge. And as I said, this is an organization we work with, and the local respondent, I want to mention that, is very important. We talked about peace, for example, from bottom up. And this local respondent, are young people, majority are women, work with their communities and try to help them, and they stayed. So they support in kitchens, in health, in other aspects, they support sexual survivors and other related needs. So as I said, we work with this humanitarian action for Sudan, and these are the people we support. So the communities come together to help in food and other thing. And where this come from? There's a word in Arabic in Sudan, it's called nafir. It's very, very old, and people do it during peacetime. So nafir means people come together to do something for a family, for a community, to build a house, to build a clinic, to build a shop. And this is the same concept and approach they have done during this war. Many women-led organizations pioneered how to support survivors and try to protect them. As you know, UN is working there, humanitarian workers are working there, but there is insecurity and the access is very difficult. But they have been doing their best in Sudan, but there, of course, there are many limitations. So the diaspora support is very, very important. All of us here in UK and around the world try to help Sudan. So one of the people we supported as well, the focal point told us, it is as though someone who had hope, who had lost hope and is in the dark, has suddenly seen the light. We cannot believe there are people thinking of us. So people really lost hope. And when we send them some support, they could not believe that there are still people in the world thinking about them and supporting them. And now we're talking about the peace. This is a peace conference. And the peace effort in Sudan is very limited. When the war broke out in 15th of April, 2023, there is one peace talk in Jeddah in May 2023, and a little bit here and there, but did not lead to anything. It failed. And now the last one is the Quad. The Quad is four countries came together. Recently, actually, in September, and that is the US, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab of Emirates. And this is only happened in September and over October, and then overshadowed by that event I just told you in Al Fashir. So we don't know where the peace is going to happen in Sudan and how. And then I think we have to watch the space as well. Because even this Quad, what people is talking about the peace, how this peace can be inclusive and effective. But again, some people, you know, contemplating how four countries, three countries, let us say, not the US, three countries, involving, have invested interest in Sudan, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, and Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. How the same countries will broke peace while they have other interests. And I think these are kind of the truth we're talking about earlier on. So what do women of Sudan want? In line of the article 1325, women want participation and genuine inclusion in peace. It's not about the critical mass. Critical mass is important, but they want genuine inclusion. They want protection, legal right. They want shelter and safe places to hide. And they want security. Justice and accountability we talked about. In terms of prevention, the conflict-related sexual violence is very high in Sudan. and the health and psychological support is very much needed. But why in Sudan we don't have MARA? MARA is a UN monitoring mission for sexual violence and reporting. It's not there in Sudan. So how people are reporting on this issue, we fear that documentation might have been lost and later on accountability might not be real. Women want recognition of women because they've been peace builder. And as you saw, they participated in all peace initiative. So they want that recognition, and not only women at the top, all of them. And they want community engagement and dispelling the stigma about sexual violence. And I think if there is one thing you could say brought an opportunity in this world, people start to talk about sexual violence, because before it's like something shameful and women are blamed and no one should talk about it. So that is something maybe we can capitalize on. And then in conclusion, I just want to say, as I said, Sudan described as the biggest war. Why it's not on the agenda? Why you don't see much of it about the paper? Why the media doesn't talk about it? Why the politicians didn't talk about it? They talk a little bit, but it fades the following day. London did the London Conference UK in May 2025, this year, and they hoped a lot will come out of it, but I mean, there was no cooperation by many countries, probably didn't happen. Humanitarian response is not is important, but not sufficient to end the war, and we know that. Addressing sexual violence is life-saving and protection and urgent matter for women and for all those who are affected. The success of localization agenda depends by large on meaningful engage of local respondents. And they need support, again, finance and the others. Then the question is, what is peace for Sudan? Being the biggest crisis in the world, the atrocities is very high, humanity is tested. So what is peace? And how are we going to have it? And peace cannot last without women's leadership. This is Amina Mohammed, the Guterres deputy, Secretary General deputy, say this as well. For me, my last visit to Khartoum, as I said, in 2022 and 2023, all these icons you will see here, they were destroyed. But they are my memories, and they are not there. But I carry that good memory with me, and we hope we can be optimistic for the war to end and for everyone to be safe. Thank you.